Hello and welcome to the Brittle Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. So today's topic is going to be in regards to training, and we're going to be talking about kind of big picture checklists for general programming. So this is going to be geared towards kind of personal trainers who are doing programming for the general population. This is inclusive of a lot of people. So I mean general population as in they're not specifically in a sport. So for most people who just want to get healthier, this is how we would kind of program for them. Now, if you're in a specific sport, people who most often listen to this podcast are going to be powerlifter, strongman, CrossFit. We have aesthetic sport athletes, so bikini, fitness figure, bodybuilding, men's physique, women's physique, all that stuff. Those are going to be kind of ours. So I do have a couple people who listen to this that are in like sports like rugby and some other kind of stuff like that. But this is more so going to be the checklist for general population. So this is meant to be something I can help and give to the trainers that I work with. So I work with trainers in person and online. And this is some stuff that's been coming up in our conversations. So I wanted to kind of make a podcast about it so I could send it to them. And then also for everyone who listens to this podcast who kind of like makes up their own workouts and or you're getting workouts from somebody else, you can check and make sure the workouts you're following or the ones you're creating have these elements in them, okay? So this is a lot of people, even people who are in those sports, you still want to have these elements in yours for sure. This would just be kind of more of like the groundwork of your training program, and then you'd have specifics on top of that. So let's go through this. It applies to pretty much everybody. So I know sometimes when I put like this is going to sound funny, but sometimes when they're too specific of a title, most people won't listen because they don't think it applies to them when there's a ton of really helpful information in there for them. And then when it's too broad-based, everybody doesn't think it applies to them because they think it's too broad when there's tons of really good specific information for them. but hopefully you guys check this out. I mean, like, hopefully you can benefit from and apply what you hear in this podcast. So the first thing we're going to start with is, again, the concept here is big picture checklists. So when we work, when we make a program as a trainer or as a person looking at your own program, you want to see if your program has these big picture things. So too often people get lost in the small little details and they're not even paying attention really to the big stuff. So I was talking to somebody recently about nutrition and they were a male and they were wondering if they were eating too much soy protein compared to like whey or casein protein or like animal-based protein, and they thought maybe it was having detrimental effects to their estrogen. Well, they actually weren't even having enough protein in general. So they were actually only eating about like maybe 3/4 of what they should have had. And they were having some other problems. Their calories weren't correct for their diet. So it was kind of funny in the sense to where they were so worried about that micro detail, but they didn't have the big picture things right. So it is important to get the small things right. Yes, it is. So I gave the person the answer they wanted. But we also have to make sure we get the big things right. So too often we get lost in the small things and we kind of analyze things to death, but we don't do the bigger picture things because it's easier for us to kind of pick on the small stuff of what we like to do rather than kind of get the broad-based things of the things we don't like to do. So, So for a lot of people, they'll either like training and hate nutrition, or some people won't mind the nutrition, but they hate training. So they'll analyze the crap out of the one that they like and not even do the other one. So that's what we want to avoid. So when we look at workout creations, so one of the first things we can look at is our workout structure. So the first kind of checklist we're going to look at, and if you guys want a visual representation of today's podcast, I'll send you the write-up if you would like to see it. So just shoot us an email, brittleirongym@gmail.com, and I'll send you the write-up of this. So the first checklist we have is workout structure. We want to include three specific components to our workout structure. Number one is there should be some type of movement prep. Okay, and we'll talk about that in more detail. Number two is there should be strength, a strength component to the workout. And number three, you should have muscular cardio. And we've talked about this in past podcasts about what we call muscle cardio. And what that means is you're doing a cardiovascular stimulus, but you're using your muscles in the process of it. So podcast number 30, titled Muscle Cardio, How to Lose Fat Without Losing Muscle. So podcast number 30. So that one, it explained for us the benefits of, instead of just doing like, you know, 20 minutes on a treadmill, we can do 20 minutes of lightly to moderately weighted like circuit exercises, so resistance training exercises, and you'll get the cardiovascular benefit, but you'll also get all the muscle benefit as well. So those are kind of the three components we want to have: movement prep, strength element, and muscle cardio element. Okay, so in your training, we're going to get into the specifics of those, but in general, you should have all of that. So if you just walk into the gym and start lifting weights, no. You need to have some kind of movement prep. Okay, if you go into the gym, you do like 20, 30 minutes of rolling around and stretching and all this stuff, and then you kind of go do some lightly weighted like resistance circuits, but you have no strength component, you're not going to get the best results. Okay. And likewise, if you come in, you prep yourself, you get your buddy ready to move, you go and lift a couple few heavy things, then BS with some friends and leave the gym, you're missing a huge component as well. So you have to have all three of these. So what we mean by movement prep is you have to prepare the body for movement, okay? You have to kind of get the body ready, get it moving. So almost no one in the general population is going to be highly active in between their workouts, to the point where they've kept their body fully loose and limber between workouts, to where they can just kind of drop right into a squat at any moment. So if they can walk through the door and all of a sudden do 10 perfect bodyweight squats without their knees creaking and crackling, or without their lower back feeling tight, or without some type of form breakdown, that would be rare. So most people, when they come in, they're going to need some type of movement prep to get their body moving. Now, where people have made mistakes in the past, and, well, people make mistakes nowadays, but I've made the mistake in my past as well, is overdoing that component, where I might have done like a 20-minute warm-up, and because it was, like, I was working my way through injuries, I was trying to figure out how to, like, reestablish a healthy balance. And what I found was I was actually over-investing. I was doing too much, whereas I could have, like, fine-tuned things and got them more concise. So a proper movement prep, in my opinion, should take about no more than about 10 minutes. So, and that's about all that's needed. So we have examples of movement preps that we use on our YouTube channel. Okay, so you can go to Brutal Iron Gym on YouTube, and you'll see a hip stretch routine. There's a shoulder warm-up routine. There's a band warm-up routine. So we have a lot of stuff like that. So if you're interested in those specific things, shoot us an email, again, at brutalirongym@gmail.com. I'll send you links to that stuff, okay? But the hip stretch routine, it has foam rolling for your adductors, has kind of foam rolling for your mid and upper back, make sure those muscles are loosened and ready to glide and slide like they should. Then there's a lunge stretch, a hamstring stretch, and a glute stretch. And all that, what it does is, I've timed it out, it doesn't take more than 8 minutes. So it kind of attacks all the areas that connect to the hips and makes sure that they're all loose and ready to move and allow freedom of movement in the hip. Okay? So if we think of our hip like structure, our bones of our hips, and all the muscles going towards the hip, you can think of it like a puppet, okay, a puppet on strings. So the puppet will only move as well and healthy as the strings are. So if I tied a bunch of knots and half the strings, the puppet's going to move kind of weird. So if we have a couple tight muscles leading into the hips are going to move kind of weird. And that's where we start getting a little bit of like annoyance and irritation to a muscle or a joint near the hips. So you'll start having inflammation, like little stabby pains, just things that kind of make the workout uncomfortable. And it's due to the fact that everything's not balanced and released properly, so the puppet of your hips isn't moving smoothly. So that hip stretch routine, like I said, it's only 8 minutes. That's a great way if you're doing like a squat workout or deadlift workout or something like that, where you know lower body is going to be a big focus. You can have them go through that, and you can pick and choose. You can try the whole routine and see, like, okay, well, maybe they don't need this one, or, you know, like, you can kind of plug and play in, but at least gives you a base to go with. We have a shoulder warm-up, which is no equipment whatsoever. It's just three movements with your arms, and you go three times through a circuit. That takes maybe 2 minutes. So you can do a 10-minute warm-up for all of the hips and the shoulders, be totally done with that. We have a band warm-up for the shoulders. It's a little more advanced. So if you have somebody who's kind of past the beginner stages and you tried that body weight warm-up for the shoulders and they're like, yeah, whatever, I don't feel anything, then you can try the banded routine, and that takes about 8 minutes. So it kind of depends on what you need. So that's kind of the idea of what we want to do with movement prep, is you want to prepare the body to move evenly. If you do that, if you take a little bit of time, so 5 to 10 minutes at the beginning of the workout, what it does for you is it, for the person lifting and exercising, it improves the quality of movement. So they can move freer from tight muscles, and then also the tight muscles aren't pulling on the healthy muscles and causing inflammation and irritation. So if you have somebody who's like, you know, oh, every time after we work out, my knees are kind of sore. Well, you might want to look at preparing them better for their lower body movements, and you might find that that soreness of the knees actually goes down in between workouts. So they'll actually recover better between workouts by simply taking 5 or 10 minutes to prepare the body. So what it does is by preparing it, you get less damage and irritation during the workout. So that's why you recover better, is because there's less to recover from. And the other benefit of movement prep is oftentimes for the general population, when they walk through the door, they have not left life outside that door yet. So they're still thinking of work, they're still thinking of errands they have to run, they're still thinking of this and that, they're still walking through the door going, oh my God, you should have heard about my, you know, like my day was this and this and this and this. And as trainers, we're often like, yeah, whatever, you're through the door, you're mine now, let's get to work. So we're freaking ready to go, fired up to go. They're still trying to calm the hell down from the craziness that led up to the door of our gym. And so there's this disconnect. So often I've found it myself in the past is it might take them 10 minutes to get into the workout. By then, I've kind of lost my excitement because they just bitched and whined for 10 minutes. And now I'm pissed off and annoyed because I didn't need somebody to dump their shit on me. So, and as a trainer, you'll know this, is I used to work at a place where we did half-hour sessions. And it wasn't uncommon for me to work with 16 to 20 people a day. And that's 16 to 20 times where people just dump their shit on you. And it's just annoying as hell. And overwhelmingly, most people's shit that they deal with is self-imposed. So it's their own stupid choices that have led to it. No one's going to like what I'm saying, by the way. The trainers are all clapping and laughing. But everyone else is like, man, this guy's an asshole. But it's mostly true. So you might not like it, but it's mostly true. So bad stuff does happen. You know, if your cat died, you know, or you lost a pet, like everybody, even me, even the jerk who's yelling at you right now, we will feel bad and we'll be happy to talk about it, you know. But I used to have a client, and this is no exaggeration, for over at least 9 months, every single workout, we trained twice a week, every single workout the person talked about how tired they were. But I would ask them what they were doing about their sleep, and they weren't doing anything correct about it. They were eating wrong before they went to bed. They were blaming a bunch of other people and animals and pets and stuff for all this crap. And a lot of it was within their own control. And then also, the other part that I told them was, if you've been complaining about this day in and day out, well, then either do something or shut the hell up. So you either do something about it or you accept it. You don't get to do nothing about it and bitch and whine like a big baby and have anybody give a shit, because you're not taking responsibility. Everybody will see that. Everybody will be annoyed by it. So take responsibility, work towards correcting it. And if you are, then you can complain as the process is going through. That's all reasonable. If you're not doing anything about it, you can't complain. You have to accept it and just say, that's my reality. Apparently, that's what I'm willing to live with, because I'm not doing anything about it. So apparently, it's what I'm willing to live with. So I just need to shut the hell up and live with it. So that would be the goal. So accept it or change it. That's kind of the thing we want to look at. So since we do have clients that come in with that kind of mindset sometimes, that movement prep time is a good time for them to kind of clear their mind. So usually movement prep is not as technical as, like, say, a big heavy squat or like an overhead press or a deadlift. So if they went into the big lift, a big technical lift, and their mind wasn't fully into it, they have a high risk of injury, or they're going to underperform. They're just not going to do very well because they're not paying full attention. So if you take 10 minutes to prep their body, you can always kind of, like, use that time to kind of talk about what you're going to do that day, the importance of it, what your main focuses are. You can kind of get that 10 minutes to kind of settle their mind. Give them a chance to bitch and whine a little bit, clear their brain, and then get into the big stuff, okay? So that's the idea of movement prep. It reduces irritation during the workout. It improves recovery time between workouts, and it gives the person mental time to get mentally into the workout, okay? Another side benefit of movement prep is when you do movement prep stuff correctly, it's going to have some muscle movement, body awareness, like your body's going to get started working. So, and often in positions and stuff that haven't worked all day. So what ends up happening is your body senses there's newness coming on. So there's new muscles moving, or body's getting ready for something. So it starts producing adrenaline and endorphins. So it starts producing more adrenaline to make the person feel more awake and more aggressive towards the workout. So they'll put a harder level of effort in. It's going to start producing more endorphins because they're going to start the irritations and the stretches and the warm-ups and stuff like that will start getting like some muscle burn. They'll have some kind of like pulling and tightness on some tight muscles. So often I usually add in some type of core bracing like planking or some type of other type of bracing into these like warm-ups. So that way we can activate the muscles of the lower back, the support muscles of the lower back, to protect them for the rest of the workout. So all that kind of stuff causes a little bit of like body, not irritation and negative, but just like how you get a pump in a muscle and it just kind of wakes everything up. So the body starts producing more endorphins, which is a natural painkiller. So if you do your movement preps correct, and again, shoot us an email if you want examples of ours, you'll get their body ready to move, and in that process, it gets the hormones ready for the workout as well. So they have more adrenaline, so they have more aggressiveness to go towards the workout and hyper-focused into the workout. They also have more endorphins, which is natural painkiller, so they're going to be able to put more effort into the workout as well. So movement prep, for all of those reasons, and I even skirted around another reason, was that if you add some type of core bracing, you can actually activate the muscles that would support and protect the lower back before you get into movements like squats and deadlifts and overhead presses and stuff. So if you've never had a client or you've never done it yourself, if you've never done plank exercises or core bracing exercises before you squat or deadlift, please try it. It does make a difference. It makes your ab muscles and your core muscles more aware and more active before you start those big movements, and you'll actually feel safer in your bracing. You'll feel stronger in your bracing, and you might actually be able to move a little more weight because you'll be more efficient in your power output. Okay, so that's the whole big thing of why movement prep is really helpful. It's a ton of reasons. So if people just come into the gym and hee-haw around with friends and do their first exercise for a couple light sets and call that a warm-up, sometimes that's not complete. And often it's not complete. So you want to have some type of thing that kind of gets the body up and moving and getting ready, okay? The next component we have is the strength component. So you want to have something that works on strength for your push muscles, which is your chest, front shoulders, and triceps. Something that works on strength for your pull muscles, which is your back, rear delts, and biceps. And then something for your legs, which would be like your glutes, quads, hamstrings. So all the adductors, abductors, everything around, like in the groin muscles, everything around the hip and thighs. Okay? So you want to think of push exercises. They can be horizontal or vertical pushes. So it doesn't always have to be a bench press. So if you're a hashtag bro, you don't have to make everybody you work with bench press. So you can do overhead presses. You can do any variety degree of inclined presses. You can do a flat press. That's fine. So, but you can think of it as any plane of pressing. So whether I'm overhead pressing or horizontally pressing. The same thing for pulls. So you can do rows. Or pull-ups or pull-downs or any kind of weird angle in between. So make sure you don't only do horizontal pushes and pulls, so not just bench press and row all the time, okay? So then you want to make sure there's something for legs. And we want to have the squat category, which is like a knee bend, and then there's a hinge, which is a hip bend. So an example of a hinge would be like a deadlift. An example of a squatting motion is, let's see, a squat. So that's the idea. So when you look at that, that's roughly about four exercises. So you want to have a push, a pull, then legs is a hinge and a squat. Now you can choose to separate this out. So say you work with a client or you have them work out twice a week. One of the workouts can be say vertical pushes and pulls and a squat. Then the next one you can have horizontal pushes and pulls and a hinge. Something like that. You can just kind of break it up. So one of my favorite combinations I typically do is an overhead press, pull-ups and pull-downs and deadlifts. And then I'll do rows, like kind of horizontal presses, like chest presses, stuff like that, and squats. So you can kind of like pair all that stuff together. And then in their muscle cardio, and we've done, for example, strength. We've done podcasts before about rep ranges and what are the correct rep ranges for building strength. So it's one of the most recent ones within the last 20 podcasts. So I'm going to let that up to you to look that up on what qualifies as working for strength. But generally, it's stuff that's 20 seconds or less of activity, so time under tension, and pretty heavy. It's going to cause good form breakdown around that 20 seconds or less marker. So you get them to try to do something. So if they're doing, you know, say overhead presses, you want the set of overhead presses to last 20 seconds or less. And that'll help them as they progress through those, like from week to week to week, to workout to workout to workout, it'll help them get stronger. Okay. Next we want to have is muscle cardio. So something that attacks their muscles and then also attacks their lungs. So in podcast number 30, way, way, way back when, in podcast number 30, we did a podcast on muscle cardio. The super duper awesome freaking wonderful benefits of that and all it entails. So go listen to that podcast. Do not make your people do normal basic cardio like walking on a treadmill or doing elliptical stuff. If that is their sole source of cardio, you are doing them a disservice. If they've maximized their amount of muscular activity and then you're just adding that, you know, that extra straight cardio as a way to add more movement, but without the muscular stress, then you're doing totally okay. But you have to make sure that you're maximizing muscular movement first and then adding things like, you know, step mill, treadmill, elliptical after the fact. So make sure their workouts are as intense as they can manage. And then if they are, and you still need them to do more, then you can give them the real traditional, like basic cardio. Okay. So typically in muscle cardio, and again, go listen to podcast number 30 to find out what's all entitled in that or included in that. Typically in muscle cardio, sometimes if in their workout, I did like one or the other of the leg strength. So I did squats in their leg strength or I did hinges. I'll include the other one in the muscle cardio. So maybe we did squat motions that day. So I'm going to make them do tire flips during their muscle cardio because tire flip is kind of like a deadlift. So that would be like a hinge. So you can kind of modify this a bunch of different ways. So, but that's kind of the idea is you kind of like mix in a little more leg movement and it's usually the complementary leg movement. So if you did squats as your strength, you would do hinges in your muscle cardio. If you did hinges in their strength, you do squats in their muscle cardio. Okay, and then we often include some type of carrying or something that involves more core bracing because that's going to help protect their lower back. They're going to need that stuff in regular life, and almost always everybody's weak in their lower back and abdominal area. So adding more core bracing and core activities is a great idea. So there's a kind of a popular coach named Dan John, and he has what he calls his five components of a complete workout, and they are presses, pulls, squats, hinges, and carries. So those five things. So that's something you can do in your workout is look through and say, okay, do I have a press? Okay, do I have a pull? Do I have a squat movement? Do I have a hinge movement? Do I have some type of carry or core bracing movement? So those are kind of a nice quick little list. So I even saw on Instagram somebody created a little whiteboard that had those titles to it, and then they would write in the exercise on their whiteboard that day next to that title. So then they would wipe the thing clean, but the titles were kind of like permanently on the whiteboard. So every day they would come in and they would just see that category of press, they would put a press in. The category of pull, they'd put a pull in. And they'd go through the list. So workout structure is movement prep, some kind of strength element, and then muscle cardio element. And you, within all of that, you want to have some type of press, some type of pull, some type of squat, some type of hinge, some type of carry. So I do typically use full body workouts for my general population, even if they work out 3 to 4 times a week, because often they can't produce enough force output because they're new to all this stuff, that they're not going to get super duper sore or so beat up that they can't work out that often. So if somebody only trains 2 or 3 times a week, they should be doing full body workouts. If somebody trains 4 days a week, then you could argue for lower and upper, something like that, okay, where they at least get each area twice a week. So if you're doing that, you still want to have some type of movement. Like, say we're doing just upper body. I still want to have a movement prep. I still want to have a strength. I still want to have muscle cardio. I would just do the push and the pull. I'd leave out the legs. And then with muscle cardio, I'd make sure they're still core bracing. I might do some light leg movement, so that way they still get some leg involvement. But again, it would be more of a push-pull focused type muscle cardio. So that's kind of the idea, okay? So our workout structure is movement prep, strength elements, and then muscle cardio. We want to make sure you have a, if you're doing full body, you want to make sure you have a press, pull, squat, hinge, carry. If you're doing your split up to upper body, lower body, then make sure throughout the week, okay, by the end of the week that you've addressed push, pull, squat, hinge, and carry, okay? Now, some quick things we want to run through in the last, like, kind of few minutes here is exercise selection. Make sure you do big movements first. So you want to, like, an example I've seen of, like, trainers in the past, they might have their client doing bicep curls as their pull exercise rather than a back exercise. The problem with bicep curls is you only use biceps. With a back row, for example, I get my biceps, but I also get my rear delts and my back muscles. So you get more bang for your buck. So when you pick exercises, make sure you pick movements first in the workout. Okay, make sure you can get these ones in first that are the bigger movements that involve more muscle tissue. Okay, so the ones that get the most bang for your buck should be first in the workout. If you get through those and you still have extra time, then for sure you can add bicep curls. So very often with most people, I have them come in, we do a push and a pull superset, then we'll do legs and some kind of core work, and then at the end, maybe we have extra time for shoulders, bis, and tris. Something like that. Really simple variations. So a good example of where you might actually want a small movement before a big movement is if you're doing a small movement to cue something that'll help improve the quality of the big movement. So, for example, one of my trainers I work with, they're having somebody work through a psoas positioning drill, which helps work their hips into the proper position for their client. So they're going to do that drill before they would do squats or leg press or stuff like that. So that way the person can pay attention to their hip positioning, and probably not leg press, I shouldn't have said that. So more free weight movements like squats, deadlifts and stuff, and lunges. So they're going to do a positioning, hip positioning drill to raise the client's awareness of the position of their hips. And then they'll do the big movement. So you can do a small movement before a big movement if it's a priming movement. So if it's something that's going to improve the quality of the big movement and teach a lesson, that's fine. But if it doesn't have any kind of real purpose, like I wouldn't do bicep curls before back so I can help feel my biceps more during back exercises, that's not really a thing. So you want to make sure if you're doing a small movement before a big movement, that the small movement specifically helps the big movement. And therefore, that would be the reason why it's first. Okay. Another thing we want to look at is heaviest, safest movements possible. So if I'm looking at like a squat variation, I want to try to make the person do the heaviest thing that they can do safely. Okay? So I'm like a good example would be like leg press. Leg press can be done super duper freaking heavy. So that way, even if they can't squat well, so if you're trying to get them to do like say a dumbbell goblet squat, and they kind of can't move very well, they don't have great positioning, and the heaviest dumbbell they can really hold on to is like 20 to 30 pounds, that is not going to make their legs much stronger. So what you want to do is you want to make sure you have a big heavy movement first, something like leg press. Get them like big, strong, heavy weight moved first. Then you can do the secondary movement like a dumbbell goblet squat, which might help them learn to eventually know how to squat. So you have to invest into the big things that get them strong now. And then if you have time, or make time, for the things that will help them in the future. Okay? So I might want them to eventually get to a back squat, but I can't just do, like, you know, piddly, lightly weighted squats and eventually get to a barbell on their back, then eventually get to maybe 95 pounds. That's going to take freaking forever. Whereas if you do leg presses, along with teaching them that other movement, they're going to get to heavier weight on that bar way the hell faster. So make sure you do big, heavy movements for their strength stuff, and then everything else is related to more so just skill acquisition and teaching them healthy, safe kind of movements. Okay? Then the next thing we have is to have something easy to learn. So don't pick stuff that's highly technical. If something is super duper technical and it takes a long teaching time to learn it, it better be damn well be worth it. So when I used to train athletes, I didn't do power cleans with them almost ever. I really didn't like the idea of power cleans because there are other movements that you can build explosiveness through that are way less technical. Now, there are a ton of strength coaches who will disagree with me on this, but there are also some that will agree with me. So it's all like to each their own. So if you could teach a power clean quickly and you could teach it safely to the athlete and you like that as part of their routine, great, keep it. I'm not going to argue with you. And by no means, like, I'm just giving an opinion. You don't have to listen to me. So, but I don't like highly technical movements because you're going to spend more time trying to teach them the damn technique than you're actually going to get a result from that. So maybe the first, especially if you only have 30-minute sessions, by the way. But if it takes them, like, several weeks to learn how to move correctly in a movement, well, that's several weeks of where they really didn't get stronger. They got a skill acquisition, and then maybe now you can use that improved skill to get them stronger. But damn, that was a lot of lead-up time. So you have to make sure that lead-up time would have been worth it, okay? So if something's highly technical, you have to make sure it's worth the investment, okay? So those are some quick things to think of. So we have the workout structure is movement prep, strength component, muscle cardio component. You want to make sure throughout a full body workout or by the end of the week of upper body, lower body workouts that you have a press covered, pull, squat, hinge, and carry. So press, pull, squat, hinge, carry. All of those things are addressed, and they're all addressed for strength, okay, in the strength rep ranges, in the strength time and retentions, okay? Last thing I'm going to leave you with, because I know this is getting long, but I do want to cover this real quick, is think about what you're doing with your clients when you write their workouts. In the grand scheme of things, are you doing what's best for them? Is what you have on that paper, is what you're taking them through, the very best, most applicable, exactly to their needs? Okay? So don't make, you know, person A do a program that was written for person B. Bullshit. Write individual programs. Okay? If you have to take on more clients and you feel like, oh man, I can't make enough money, you know, I have to have more and more people and I have so many people that I have to do scripted programs that everybody does the same thing, you're not charging enough. Okay, charge more. So charge enough money to the people you work with that you can do individual programming. You have time for it. Have them pay as part of their pay as your programming time. Okay, so if you devote an hour to their programming every month, charge for that. You're dedicating that time to them. It's not a negative thing. I don't mean to be a jerk, you know, but, you know, if I'm hiring somebody to prepare, like, a website for my company, I would pay them for the time they're investing into it, okay? When we pay in a mechanic to fix their car, you pay time. You pay time for manual labor, like labor costs, okay? Same thing as a trainer. You charge for the time that you're with them, you know, and you would charge for your labor costs or your, like, the time for programming. So I've talked to a ton of clients and trainers online where I've had a trainer who used to sell programs for $20 a program, and they would advertise them as individualized programs for $20. All they did was change the person's name at the top of the program. So it'd be like, you know, booty workout for 8 weeks, you know, $20. Here, this is personalized to you. This is the same damn thing as the other 100 people who bought it. All they did was change their name. That's being an asshole, okay? If you advertise it as personalized, make it personalized. If it's generic and it's going to be copied from person to person, make sure that that's truthful in your advertising and the way that you sell it, okay? Don't be an asshole. Don't ruin this business, this industry, okay? So if you're going to make programs for people, make them as personalized as possible. If you feel like you have to work with too many people to do that, charge more, okay? Now, the idea of this is you want to do what's absolutely best for them. So, some things we want to think of here. Am I doing what's best for them, or am I doing something kind of cool because I want to impress them? No. If that's the case, don't do that, okay? Don't do something brand new and wild and crazy just because you want them to think that you're intelligent and you're up with the most recent knowledge, okay? People will respect results. So if they come in every week and they do goofy, weird shit but they never get results, they don't care that they're doing goofy new stuff every week. They want the results. So even if your program has to be somewhat boring because that's what's best for them, then do it, okay? Have fun in your conversations. Maybe change up your warm-ups. Change up different elements. You know, just kind of like make everything else around that consistent component as changed as you can. But if the boring basics is what they need, then stay with the boring basics, okay? Now, another question. Am I doing what's best for them, or am I doing only what I think they'll agree to do? Bullshit. Okay, your job isn't to hold their hand and say, oh, what would you like to do today? Bullshit. You're the professional. They're paying you money. You tell them what's best for them to do. Now, you have to obviously take into account, like, what they're capable of, what are their general interests, you know, what are their long-term goals. I'm not saying, you know, don't pay attention to that stuff. But if you know exercise X is best for them, and you know that getting to this amount of weight, a certain amount of weight, is what's needed, then get them into exercise X and get them to that weight. Tell them why it's important. Talk to them. Get them involved in the process. Let them know why it's important and tell them, hey, man, this might stretch, or woman, this might stretch your comfort zone, but we've got to do this stuff. This is important. This is what I know will lead you to the results that you want. So let's step it up. Let's give it a try. We can take a couple weeks to get into it if you need to. So if we try it today and you get a little, you know, flustered, that's okay. Let's at least introduce it today. So you can see how you can talk them into it. But don't run away from it, okay? Don't just do stuff that they want to do. Don't let your clients dictate the workout. You're the professional. They're paying you for your knowledge. If they knew how to get there on their own, they'd already be there, okay? They're paying you to get there, get them there. So you use your knowledge. You are in charge, okay? So don't only do what you think they'll agree to. Do what's best for them. Last one, am I doing what's best for them, or am I doing something kind of new to prevent them from being bored? I'm afraid they're bored with the training. I'm afraid if they get bored, they won't continue. Okay, this is a yes and a no, okay? It's true that you can't just do the exact same freaking workout every time they come in. They will get bored, and that's arguable whether it's even necessary, okay? So it's true that you might need them to get better at squats. So you're going to need them to repeat maybe even a specific style of squat. But you can do a different type of warm-up. You can do different activation exercises. You can do different planks paired with the squat. So maybe 1 week you do side plank variations. Next week you do anti-rotation plank variations. Maybe next week you do some kind of weighted carry in between their squats. So you can change up those components. You can change up the exercises after the squats. So make as much change and variety as what you can, but don't sacrifice the most important component. If the most important component needs to be repetitive, then make it repetitive. Okay, it's not your job to prevent boredom. They said they wanted X results. You're telling them what it takes to get X results. If that requires something that's highly repetitive, then so be it. Okay. Now, your job as a trainer is to create as much variety around that as possible. So, but you can't just create variety for no positive reason whatsoever. So if you're just making up new shit all the time because you're afraid they're going to get bored, but what you're doing from week to week to workout maybe isn't the best for them, then that's not a good thing. You're not doing the best for them in terms of what your job is, like what you're hired for. So your job is to do what's actually best for them in the workout to get them the results, whether they like it or not. So if you know they're not going to like it, talk to them and tell them why it's important. Maybe find a compromise, but don't let your client dictate what is going to happen in the sessions. Okay, so this one got longer than I thought it would, but hopefully it was helpful. So again, big picture checklist for general programming. We want to do workout structure, movement prep, strength components, muscle cardio components. Make sure within the week or within a full body workout you address pushes, pulls, squats, hinges, and carries. Then make sure you do big movements first, unless you're doing a priming or cueing movement. Make sure you do your heaviest, safest movements possible. So make sure they're doing something heavy for strength, not piddly, stupid crap that isn't actually going to get them stronger. And make sure that if it's something that's highly technical, make sure it's worth the time investment. So if you're teaching them something that's taking a while to teach, it better be worth it. If it isn't, abandon it and move on to something else. Okay? And then constantly ask yourself, am I doing what's best for the client? Or am I doing what's best for myself if you're doing your own programming, okay? So am I doing what's best, or am I only doing what I'm comfortable with, or am I only doing like cool new stuff and always bouncing around from newest thing to newest thing, but I'm never actually making sure I'm progressing at anything? So you have to make sure you kind of do the best, most basic stuff, okay? Hopefully this was helpful. If you have any extra questions about this topic, feel free to email us at brutalirongym@gmail.com, and we'll help you out, okay? So if you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Brutal Iron Gym. Also, if you like the podcast, please share it with family and friends. So the more people we help, the happier the world will be. And if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we would love to hear from you. So the podcast is for you, so we want to know what you want to learn about. Okay? And you can reach us at our email at brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.